flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Hey, it's Gemma Spegg, host of the Open Mind Original podcast, Mantra. Every Monday, I'll bring you a new mantra, a simple yet powerful phrase to help you clear your mind and stay grounded amidst the chaos. I'll also share some personal stories, journal prompts, and a weekly challenge to bring each mantra to life. Follow and listen to Mantra, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Open Mind Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Your inside pass to everything Saints football.
See you later, bye! Touchdown, Rashid Shaheed!
We'll take you to places most fans never go. To practice, to the sideline, to the locker room. Following every twist, turn, and touchdown of the Saints season.
That is going to be a touchdown! Taysom Hill! Taysom TD!
Welcome to Inside Black and Gold.
To the end zone, and that is a touchdown for Chris Olave.
Now, here are your hosts, Steve Geller and Jeff Nowak.
Oh, baby!
Hey, y'all, who dat and what is up? I'm Jeff Nowak. This is Inside Black and Gold, and that outside my window is a snowy hellscape that I have not seen since I lived up in the north. And so it's been a weird week, to say the least. So this is not going to be your most jam-packed informational podcast you've ever heard, but do want to get into some things. Yeah, I was originally going to record this yesterday, but you're in kind of a holding pattern because, hey, is Aaron Glenn going to take the head coaching job with the Jets? I didn't want to come on here and record an entire podcast and then have Aaron Glenn say, hey, I'm going to take the Jets job. And then all the stuff I said yesterday is now dated. And I also didn't want to come on here and assume he was going to take the Jets job, which everyone kind of assumed, but whatever, because then I would come on here and all that would be dated. So I waited. Instead, I went and played out in the snow, had a good snow day down here in New Orleans. And I swear, if you're not here and you're seeing this and you haven't looked at the pictures, look at the pictures. It's crazy. You know, what I tell people is like, hey, I've dealt with snowstorms where it drops 7, 8, 10 inches of snow. That's not unusual. What's unusual down here is it's 24 hours later and the snow is still in the streets. They've not done anything with it because they can't. You're canceling NBA games. You're canceling college games. The Bucks are trapped here because they can't. The Bucks, the basketball team, are trapped here because they're trying to, like, we got to go home and play the Heat tomorrow in Milwaukee. How the hell are we going to do that? The runways are closed. So there's been a lot going on. I enjoyed the snow day, and now we're coming back. We're talking about head coaches, right? The Saints were also planning on getting their head coaching interviews kicked off. They couldn't do that because of the snow. So it really did throw a wrench into the works for basically everybody down here in Louisiana. It screwed everything up. But we are here. We are recording this podcast, and news breaking a few hours ago, I suppose, as I record this, Aaron Glenn is, in fact, taking the head coaching job of the New York Jets. So that is a domino, a pretty big domino in terms of how things are going to work for the Saints. So this first segment, I want to get into that. I want to talk about, okay, what does that mean for the Saints? Where do you go from here? That sort of thing. Who are the coaches they're looking at? Who are my top choices for, hey, who do I want to see land the job? Or who do I expect to land the job? Talk about all that here. Second segment, I want to dive into two things, really. One, Darren Rizzi and his candidacy for this job and why we should probably be taking him a lot more seriously than we are, just generally speaking. And the reason we're talking about that is Alvin Kamara goes out on social media yesterday and declares his support for Darren Rizzi. And that's not new, but I don't know, throwing that out on social media right now during all of this, this time, this week, where the Saints are starting to interview people, I don't know. That's a pretty significant decision to make for your star running back. And, you know, these guys are coming down here, they interview and they see that and like, oh, okay. So is Alvin not going to be on my side if I get this job? You know, so let's talk about that. We'll get into it. Then the final segment is just going to be kind of a look ahead. Got the Senior Bowl coming up next week. I'll be out there in Mobile. What am I going to be looking for? I don't have a list of targets, of players I'm staring at closely at this point. It's going to be what I do over the next few days is come up with that list. But there are positions that I'm interested in. There are ideas. There are concepts. What should the Saints be looking for? I just want to talk a little bit about that as we kind of get into that week and we get more into off-season mode. You know, I think the Saints are going to really start to narrow down this coaching search over the next week or so. It's just going to be a question of when. And so that's kind of what we'll start with. So we'll get to Aaron Glenn in a second. The first thing to keep in mind, the Saints were not eligible to begin interviewing coaches in person until the divisional round of the playoffs is over, which meant Sunday. So January 20th, that was the first day they could have potentially had interviews with coaches. So they started to schedule them. Well, they scheduled two interviews to happen on Tuesday, one on Wednesday. You know, they have it all set up. And then wouldn't you know it, we have the most snowfall in 130 years in New Orleans and Louisiana. And all that goes to shit. So those coaches that they were initially going to interview starting on Tuesday, Dolphins defensive coordinator Anthony Weaver, a guy that I don't know if a ton of people know a lot about, but he's been around forever. He was a former second round pick out of Notre Dame. He played in the league. He's well respected, former linebacker, defensive minded guy. I don't know if things went for him the way he hoped they would over with the Dolphins, but you know, he was in these coaching searches last year. Didn't really, I don't know if he got taken seriously, ended up saying, hey, I'm going to go be a defensive coordinator. That's going to help my case get a little higher on this totem pole. And we'll see how that goes. The other guy, Giants offensive coordinator, Mike Kafka. Now people are going to look at him and say, why? You know, like what about that Giants team is leading you to believe that Mike Kafka should be a head coach in the NFL? And, you know, I tend to agree, especially as someone who begrudgingly watches a lot of Giants games, hoping things might get better. No, they're never going to get better. But, you know, you look at his situation and you're saying, hey, okay, 2022, when he was really in charge of the offense, things looked pretty good for Daniel Jones, for the Giants. They went to the playoffs. They beat the Vikings, right? They ended Kirk Cousins basically with the Vikings. And, you know, it is what it is. You know, last year they looked okay. Daniel Jones gets hurt. The season goes to shit. Brian Daboll takes over play calling. It never really worked the way they probably wanted it to work. And, you know, you can point to a lot of things in that Giants organization that didn't go well. What he really has is a feather in his cap is the time he spent in Kansas City. He's the former quarterbacks coach for Pat Mahomes, pass game coordinator. And anyone tied to that organization over the past 5-6 years, you're going to get taken seriously. Now, one other thing I will mention as it pertains to Mike Kafka and Anthony Weaver is the Rooney Rule. And I know people kind of just sigh and they're like, why are we even talking about this? Well, you do have to satisfy those requirements. Whether you agree with the fact that they are the requirements that they are, whether you think the Rooney Rule needs to be changed, updated, whatever, you have to, as a team, satisfy those requirements. And the question I have not been able to get a concrete answer to at this point is whether Mike Kafka, who is of Puerto Rican descent, qualifies as a minority candidate. Because if he does, then between Anthony Weaver and Mike Kafka, you have satisfied those requirements, so you don't have to go outside of your current slate of candidates to satisfy that requirement, right? Now, Aaron Glenn, obviously, with Anthony Weaver, would have made that a non-question because you would have had that solidified and you could have done whatever you needed to do. If Mike Kafka does not qualify, then the Saints, then that's why you might see the Saints go and interview someone that you haven't heard of yet, like a Leslie Frazier or someone, right? Like, it's just, it's frustrating to watch that rule be implemented and watch teams basically circumvent the idea by going out and interviewing people for these kind of nominal interviews that aren't really taken seriously. But I don't think you can look at the Saints and say, well, they're not abiding by the spirit of this rule. Aaron Glenn just never came to interview, right? They were trying to interview Aaron Glenn. So that's going to be an interesting question. We'll get to some of these other candidates as we go. But, you know, Aaron Glenn, should you be upset that the Saints did not land Aaron Glenn? Yeah, I don't know. Probably I would be. And, you know, one of the things that kind of came up in the division round of the playoffs, a lot of people deciding for themselves, like, Aaron Glenn sucks anyway. We didn't want him. He's not a good defensive coordinator, whatever. You know, and I think that that was a little self-fulfilling in terms of, if you didn't think he was a good coaching candidate prior to that, you watched how that game unfolded against the Commanders and you were like, well, this is, you know, this is not a head coach, whatever. I don't know. I went into that game predicting both teams to be in the 40s. And that did not change my opinion of Aaron Glenn as a potential head coach. If you listen to this podcast, you would have heard me say that because I said it on this podcast. And if you need a reminder, here you go. They outscore you. I could see that game being in the 40s on both sides, because that's the type of game we saw the Lions play later in the year. And that's why it's funny. We're like, hey, we want to hire their defensive coordinator of a team that's like losing games. They score 40 points in. But hey, we're going to figure it out. Yeah. And so, like, if I went into that game saying I expected it to be in the 40s on both sides, why would I then change my opinion of a guy based on how the game went? That's just the state of that Lions defense, man. If you paid attention, they had an insane number of injuries. And it's not an excuse, but it is just the reality that you look at and you say, okay, how successful can you be when you have to adapt this blitz-heavy scheme and you end up in the worst possible matchup for that blitz-heavy scheme? Yeah, maybe Pat Mahomes would be a worse matchup. But you watch Jaden Daniels play and you understand, like, he is not fazed by the blitz. Like, there's certain guys that you don't blitz because they're going to make it hurt. You know, like, there's a reason, you know, Tom Brady was a statue. You didn't blitz him because he understood how to beat it. And that's Jaden Daniels. So I'm not going to let that paint my opinion of Aaron Glenn. Like, what you need to understand about a coach is how players fight for that guy. Like, I'm going to go find someone who players want to run through a wall for and then figure out the rest from there. And from a scheme perspective, you can figure it out. Every person you talk to a man says, I want to play for that guy. You know, and so can you get, you know, if half your roster is hurt, how successful will you be? We just watched the Saints have to answer that question over and over and over again. The fact that that ended up being the number seven scoring defense in the NFL, despite all of those injuries, despite everything that happened over the course of the season. I mean, you lost three defensive backs in that game. Amik Robertson was one of their best, probably their best defensive player by the end of the season. And he got hurt. I think he broke his arm. It was significant. So I don't know. I think the Jets got a really good coach. I think the Saints are worse off for not landing Aaron Glenn. They wanted Aaron Glenn. Aaron Glenn was probably their top candidate, and he was supposed to come here and interview. What you can say is it's not that he wasn't considering the Saints. It was that, you know, those reports that he preferred the Jets pretty clearly are true. Lance Newmark sounds like he's going to go be their GM. He was with Washington this year, but he spent several years with Detroit, so they know each other very well. There was this idea that, okay, maybe Lance Newmark goes to the Raiders and Ben Johnson goes to the Raiders. Well, that didn't happen. Ben Johnson goes to the Bears, talking about bringing in Dennis Allen as his defensive coordinator, you know, and now it's Detroit staring around being like, man, what are we going to do? Hopefully Dan Campbell is the truth, because if Dan Campbell's secret was I have Ben Johnson and Aaron Glenn, well, that's not the case anymore. So you better restack that deck in a way that works. Otherwise, like, you know, if the Lions fall off a cliff without those coordinators, then we're going to start talking about it as, okay, well, this was not Dan Campbell all along. But that's just the danger when you go with the quote unquote CEO head coach. You lose both your coordinators because they're both excellent. Man, that's tough to replace in one off season. Usually you're like, my offensive coordinator. When you're losing your defensive coordinator too, that's tough. And, you know, Dan Campbell came out and said, like, hey, if Aaron Glenn doesn't get hired in this cycle, that's ridiculous, because he's an excellent coach and he did get hired. If he didn't get hired by the Jets, he probably was going to get hired by the Saints. And really the only question, I think, over the last couple of days was whether Aaron Glenn was going to try to turn it into a bidding war between the Saints and the Jets. And to me, I think the better case scenario than, you know, like what the scenario we're in is a better case than Aaron does come down here for an interview, strings you along for multiple weeks, and then goes to the Jets anyway after you make all these competitive offers. And it was really just him trying to one up the Jets so you could get a bigger contract. That wouldn't have done the Saints any favors. That wouldn't have done the candidate that they ended up with any favors. What this does is it allows the Saints to focus on that group of coaches that they have a chance at. And so who are those, right? Okay, we mentioned Mike Kafka. We mentioned Anthony Weaver. Sounds like Mike McCarthy is going to get interviewed here at some point. The weather is throwing a wrench into all of these things, right? The fact that these are extensive head coaching interviews. It's not like you're knocking four out in one day. You're talking 4 to 6 hours a pop. Like you're talking, hey, you're meeting with a dozen people. Like you're not just bringing someone in the building, talking to them for 20 minutes and then saying that's our head coach, right? So you have to space these out. So, I mean, when are you going to interview Mike Kafka? When are you going to interview Anthony Weaver? And again, you have to do those interviews. You can't just not interview people. And that's why when you see a team like the Bears move that quickly, that becomes complicated. So that's why they have all these, you know, those interviews with guys like, why, you know, and that's why it's, you know, like the Patriots and Vrabel and all that. It's whatever. But that's where you are. So Mike Kafka, Anthony Weaver, Mike McCarthy would probably be next on that list. And then you go forward. Joe Brady, Kellen Moore, both guys that are interesting. I think Kellen Moore is going to end up being a much higher prospect in the Cowboys coaching search. And if you're keeping score at home, the Cowboys, Saints, Jaguars, and Raiders are the only teams left that do not have their head coach hired. You want to talk about a team that's out in the cold? It's the Jaguars, who they were all in on Liam Cohen, Bucs offensive coordinator, and he said, "Yeah, I'm good." He did the Ben Johnson thing from last year, something that I would not be surprised if Joe Brady does this year, particularly if they lose to the Chiefs in the AFC Championship and don't get to the Super Bowl. I could see Joe Brady doing that. We'll have to wait and see, because you can't talk to either Joe Brady or Kellen Moore in person until after the divisional round of the playoffs. But the Jaguars, I think they had their kite hitched to Liam Cohen. Liam Cohen says no, and they go and fire Trent Baalke, their GM. So they're starting from scratch. I have no idea what they're going to do. But when you're talking about a team with Trevor Lawrence, former number one overall pick, and you cannot draw any of these top offensive coaches, that's pretty telling of what people think of your organization. So we'll see how the Saints match up with that. But I expect, you know, people are going to get annoyed because it's going to take a while. But I think you want to interview Joe Brady. I don't know how deep you want to go down the rabbit hole with Kellen Moore, but I do think you want to interview Joe Brady. So I don't think you're going to see the Saints make a hire this week. I think they're going to wait. They're going to try to get that interview done, and then you're going to decide between the top candidates, which to me remain as what they were going in, minus Aaron Glenn, who was at the top. You knock him off. Like, I had a list, which was like, I want Aaron Glenn, but he could go to the Jets, cross him off. I want Joe Brady, but he could do something else. He could stay in Buffalo. He could pick someone else, and you can end up crossing him off. I want Mike McCarthy. Now, he was at the top of the list for the Bears, but the Bears hired Ben Johnson. So that kind of opens you up for Mike McCarthy. I don't know what his goals are, what his wants are for a head coaching spot. But if I'm the Saints, and he wants the Saints. Like, I had a whole podcast where I talked about this. Like, this is a guy, to use a Bobby Hebert term, he's got skins on the wall. Like, he's done it. He has won at the highest level. He's won in multiple places, right? Like, you could say, oh, he had Aaron Rodgers. Okay, but he won three consecutive 12-win seasons with the Cowboys, with Dak Prescott. So it wasn't just Aaron Rodgers. So you could say, well, he doesn't have that guy coming here. And I tend to agree with you, but if you look at any objective metric, Derek Carr was right up there in the top 10, top 12 quarterbacks in the NFL this past year. So I don't know if you're going to stick with Derek Carr. Maybe a guy like Mike McCarthy does make sense, because, you know, it's a more established name. It's a guy that has a system he's going to want to bring in. He's going to want to build with the players in the room, and the veteran players in place will make that easier to do. What does that mean for an offensive coordinator? What does that mean for a defensive coordinator? What does that mean for a special teams coordinator? I don't know, but he's on my list. He's right behind Joe Brady. Then after that, special teams coordinator / interim head coach, Darren Rizzi. He had also interviewed for that Jets head coaching job. That's no longer on the table. There's a lot of interest in him as a special teams coordinator if the Saints and him part ways this offseason. You know, whether it's the Broncos, whether it's the Bears, whether a lot of these teams are going to want to take a long look at Darren Rizzi as their special teams coordinator, because they should, because he is an excellent special teams coordinator. But that's kind of where I am. Like, I don't see the Anthony Weaver, you know, interview going anywhere. I don't see the Mike Kafka interview going anywhere. I think you really are down to those guys, and we'll see how it goes, right? But I would be fine with any of those three guys. And the nice thing is that the Bears are off the table, and I don't see, other than the Cowboys, which I think the Cowboys have a very specific type of coach in mind, You know, like the Cowboys are not going to be in on, for example, Mike McCarthy. You know, they're not going to bring him back. They could have. So they're not going to be in competition for him. So if you're looking at, hey, if I'm Mike McCarthy and I really want to coach next season, I don't want to take a year off. Maybe he does want to take a year off. I don't know. But if he doesn't, he's not looking at the Jaguars and saying this is a better situation. You're not looking at the Raiders, who they hired a new GM and John Spytek today. That's not a better situation, right? So, you know, if I'm Mike McCarthy and I'm saying what's my best of these three options, I'm probably looking at the Saints, a team that I'm familiar with, a front office that I'm familiar with. And I say, yeah, that's what I'm going to do. So I think the Saints are actually in a pretty good situation in terms of there's these coaches on the table. Like, you know, if Joe Brady, is he going to go to the Jaguars? Does that make more sense to him? Maybe the Raiders. I don't know. Maybe someone's going to drop a bag on him. We'll see. But I have questions about Joe Brady too. I think his interviews are going to be very important. Like, you look at some of these guys and you say, hey, we already know what we know about Darren Rizzi. You know, we can get some information on what he's going to want to do, but we have an idea, right? Mike McCarthy is a known commodity. Like, he's not going to go in these interviews and you're going to be like, well, what's your coaching method going to be? Like, we can look and watch and talk and ask people what his coaching methods are going to be. And they'll tell us, right? With Joe Brady, you just don't know. I mean, you know him personally from when he was here, but you don't know what he's going to be as a head coach. You don't know what his priorities are as a head coach. That's all going to be found out in real time. So I think his interviews are going to be very important. And we'll see just how far down that pathway you go, but that's where you are for the Saints. And I expect these head coaching interviews to be done maybe over the weekend, right? Maybe in early next week. And then you try to figure something out with Joe Brady and maybe a Kellen Moore. Mike McCarthy is free to interview whenever he wants. But again, there's timing constraints. When are you able to fly in here? Like, I'm telling you, I could not drive my car if I wanted right now. Now, I'm sure the Saints have some nicer vehicles. I'm sure they have a four-wheel drive, maybe snow tires on some of these vehicles. They could probably get around a little easier than I could. But I don't think you want to be in a scenario where you're reporting out how Mike McCarthy was coming in to interview, but you skidded off the road. And then you figured it out. Like, this is a serious situation in terms of the weather conditions and how you're going to be able to do this. So, like, there's no interviews happening today, right? Maybe tomorrow. You know, it's going to get warmer. Some of this is going to melt. They brought in plow trucks from, like, Indiana and Arkansas to try to get this sorted out. But it's definitely not simple. I don't know what's going on at the airports. I haven't looked, but it's probably not easy. So all that's going to be part of this conversation. The Saints aren't going to rush it. Like, someone asked me on Twitter, like, couldn't they just offer Aaron Glenn a contract over Zoom? And, like, they could. There's nothing saying they can't do that, but they do have a process and they're going to go through that process. Like, you're not going to rush to hire someone because it snowed. Like, you're going to go through it. And, you know, the fact is, these jobs that are next to you are not going to draw anyone to be like, yeah, I have a chance to go coach there, but yeah, they're taking their time. I want to get there today, you know? So I don't see that happening. So that's where you are. Right. And we'll see how it goes. Like, I am skeptical of like a Ben Johnson in Chicago. Like, everyone's on board with that Ben Johnson hire. And we'll see, you know, like, the mad scientist offense coordinator thing, it's worked before, it'll work again. But I think you're going to have a really weird dynamic with that team that we'll see how it develops. And Caleb Williams is, you know, if it works, it works. If it doesn't work, that thing's going to go down in flames fast. So we'll see how that goes. Like, Patriots, Mike Vrabel, you know, they're interesting situations, and we'll find out. You know, Josh McDaniels got hired by the Patriots for what I think is the 19th time. He's going to be their offensive coordinator again. I don't think he's going to get another head coaching gig. If the Bears do hire Dennis Allen, which I would be surprised if he's not high on the list for the Lions. I've said that a few times. It would be weird if he's not. I think he's going to have a few options, and we'll see. If he does go sign with the Bears, the Saints are going to play him next year. So that'll be an interesting homecoming. But that's it on the coaching search part of it for now. Again, I'm Jeff Nowak. This is Inside Black and Gold. It is cold, so I'm wearing a sweater. I'm in camo, but I think you can see me. It's not very good camo, but sometimes I try to hide from the dog because he's colorblind, and, you know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But either way, we're going to come back. We're going to talk about Alvin Kamara and why he is so on board with Darren Rizzi. He's with the RIZ. Yeah, you know me. And whether that actually matters, like, should you care? Should the front office care? Like, We'll hear from what Alvin said at the end of the regular season, what he said this week, and go from there. Again, this is Inside Black and Gold, and we're going to close out with kind of a look ahead, Senior Bowl, all that stuff, what comes next. Inside Black and Gold, Snowstorm Edition. I'm Jeff Nowak, and we are talking about head coaches. We are talking about running backs, Twitter accounts. You know, Alvin Kamara. Let's talk about it. Alvin Kamara is down with some head coach. I don't know if you can crack this code, but his vote for the next Saints head coach has a name that rhymes with fizzy. As Cam Jordan indicated, it also rhymes with drizzy. And with Pizzy. Yeah. So anyway, yeah. Okay. Alvin Kamara is a Darren Rizzi guy. And he made that clear. And he also kind of threw some shade at some of these Twitter experts in terms of what they think a good head coach is. And, you know, he made some jokes about Madden and not getting people to pass you the ball or the park. And I don't know if he's talking about a football game or a basketball game, whatever. But Alvin Kamara is a Darren Rizzi guy. And here's the thing. We already knew that. That's not new. Quite literally, the day after the regular season ended, and we went and talked to Alvin Kamara in the locker room, and he said this.
Man, I think the thing about this business, you're measured by wins and losses. And, you know, Rizzi obviously came in at a time where we needed a jolt, and he gave that to us, right? But, you know, I think everybody, for the most part, everybody, nobody cares about the word interim. They like, well, they went 5-12, you know what I'm saying? And then, you know, you lose a couple games, and it's like, oh, well, we need a new coach, you know. But internally, from what I've seen, like I know Rizzi is more than capable. He's not scared to make change. He's not scared to hold people accountable. He holds himself accountable. He's just a genuine dude, you know what I'm saying?
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
And I think personally he has what it takes to be a head coach in this league. Now, like I said, there's conversations that got to be had upstairs. There's evaluations that need to be done. The process is still going to be the process. I'm going to interview coaches and see what's going on. But, you know, shoot, if I had to throw a vote in the hat, like I'm with Rizzi, you know, but that don't necessarily mean the most, because like we said, again, it might be things that, you know, upstairs they have conversations and they think they need, and it might not be Rizzi or it might not be another candidate, you know. So that's why I don't like to go too far into that, because I want to, you know, want to make sure, even talk to Rizzi, like, and see what he thinks and see what he needs or he wants, because this is a business where, you know, we all looking for the same results, so we got to help each other. And, you know, I think the past 3 years it's been a lot of disconnect on the teamwork thing, you know, from upstairs and in here. So we just got to get on, everybody got to get on the same page and figure it out.
Do you want to be a part of those conversations?
I got a different approach. Like, you know, when you say that, I kind of see like sitting in a meeting formally, like like with a notepad, and that's not my jam. That ain't my approach. I think y'all kind of see how I move around and you know how I communicate and how I interact with people. So mine is a little bit more informal, a little bit more like, you know, what's up? Like, so, I do in some sort of capacity. And you know, I think that's another thing, like, just transparently, like, Nikki, how involved can I be, or how involved do you want me to be? And none of it is taken personally. Like, if it's like, well, nah, we don't need you in there. All right, that's cool. Like, y'all let me know if y'all need me. I'll be somewhere, maybe in Africa, maybe in Portugal, maybe in Spain. I don't know, but y'all let me know and I'm available. So we'll see.
Yeah, so he didn't mince words then. He kind of minced words now. Like, he could have just came out and said Riz. He kind of decided to do the whole rhyming convention thing, which, I don't know, it doesn't really change anything. But, you know, it is funny because he comes out and tweets that, and people are acting like, oh man, Alvin has made his statement. He's decided. But, you know, if you're paying attention, 3 weeks ago, he had already made that statement. And it does, you know, and again, you know, I say this a lot, like, I feel like we say stuff and it just kind of rolls off people's backs, like, yeah, whatever, I don't care, I'm going to say what I want, I'm going to have the conversation I wanted to have, whether that's involved in it or not. But the players support Darren Rizzi, and that's been the case with Alvin. We talked to Cam Jordan, we've talked to, you know, even like an MVS, you know, a guy who showed up mid-season, very strongly supportive of how Rizzi managed things. Like, MVS has a really interesting scope on this situation. One, because he started the year somewhere else, right? Two, because he spent those years with Kansas City and the Chiefs and won Super Bowls, and so he has a good idea of what it takes to win a Super Bowl. And three, because he showed up right at the tail end of the Dennis Allen experience and got an idea of, like, what was going on. I don't think he liked it very much. He liked it all that much. And then DA gets catapulted out of the building, and Darren Rizzi takes over and makes a lot of changes. And you see a guy who's like, yeah, okay, this looks a lot more like what I'm used to. And, you know, that had some immediate success. First, you won 3 out of your first 4 games. Could have been 4, right? If you executed in the red zone against the Rams, you came down to a 2-point conversion against the Commanders. Like, if you, even if you kicked an extra point, you went to overtime. Who knows? Maybe you win that game there. Maybe you execute on that 2-point conversion and you win. You know, so you were pretty close to going 5-3, right? Like, you were about as close as you can be to going 5-3. Instead, you went 3-5. You also, you know, if that game in week 18 is under different circumstances, right? If the Saints are playing for a playoff spot, I don't know, maybe that goes a little differently. Either way, like, you know, you went to halftime up 10 points with your backup quarterback. Like, I don't know, like, you saw a team playing hard. So it wasn't like, hey, you know, they're just going through the motions. Like, go watch how the Jets season kind of went down the stretch, right? Go watch how some of these other interim situations have gone down the stretch of the season. You know, obviously the game in Green Bay, that was brutal. The game against the, that's rough. But, like, no one phoned it in. No one kind of said, hey, I'm done with this, right? And I think, you know, that's telling. And I asked Darren at his postseason press conference, like, what he made of, you know, people not asking out and these star players, like Alvin talked about as well. Like, he could have forced his way out. Like, that happened right before the trade deadline. He could have said, nah, I don't want to be here. Like, find a way. You know, Cam Jordan, you know, there was a series of articles that went up kind of detailing Cam Jordan's season and a lot of the discontent that occurred between he and Todd Grantham and the situation at large and Dennis Allen and the lack of communication. He was looking and saying at a certain point, like, can I get out of here? Like, I don't like how this is going, man. Like, this is not good. And, you know, his agent kind of talked him down. So, like, this is not going to really work all that well if we try to trade you or whatever. So he stuck it out. And, you know, for him to be at the end of the season saying that this is a guy who's head coach material, that's a pretty sharp turn from the point where Cam Jordan looked like he was about to storm out of Bank of America Stadium and walk home on his own to week 18, where he's now had 4 sacks and, you know, if he's a bigger part of the rotation and he's there. So, like, that's a pretty marked shift from a locker room perspective. And so all this is to say, should the player supporting impact how the front office views the coaching search? My answer is yes and no, right? Because for me, it's like, if I'm the front office and I'm really high on Mike McCarthy. I'm really high on Joe Brady, and that's my top candidate, and that's who I'm going to offer. The player saying I'd prefer Darren is not going to change my mind in that sense. It's not going to be like, well, we were going to hire this guy, but the players want Darren, so we're going to go Darren. Like, you're not doing that, right? But when it comes to Darren specifically, if you are looking at it and saying, we're really high on Darren, we want to hire Darren, that's when the player support comes in. That's when it's like, hey, the players, you know, want this guy. So that kind of makes your decision a lot easier if that's where you're landing. If Mike McCarthy goes in and bombs his interview and you're like, I don't really like where he's at right now from a coaching perspective. He's a little old. I don't know how he's going to connect to the players. Ugh. If Joe Brady walks in and it's like, ooh, he's a little greener than I thought from a head coaching perspective. I just don't think he's ready. I don't think he's head coach material right now. He needs another year or two in the oven. Ugh. You know? And then you're looking at Risen saying, I just think he's in the best spot to take over and be the head coach of this team. That's when it's like, hey, if the players weren't behind you, I don't think you have a chance as an interim. Like, no interim in the history of the NFL has gotten a job with the leadership of the team saying, we don't believe this guy can be the head coach. Right? It's you have to have that support. So that's where the value of that support comes in. It's as you look through your pool of candidates, if you have him at the top because you think he's the best option, then you talk to Alvin and you're like, dude, he's the best option. Then that helps you. So we'll see how it goes. But I also don't think you should ignore like the idea that the players in that room are for this guy, because the players in that room are going to have to play for this coach no matter what it looks like. And people will compare it to Dennis Allen. They'll compare it to Antonio Pierce. I think these are false equivalencies to some extent. Like, first of all, I don't think Antonio Pierce should have gotten fired. I think that's just a sign of the Raiders being a badly managed organization, right? If you're going to go with Antonio Pierce, go with Antonio Pierce. Doing what they did just makes it uncomfortable. It's like doing what they did not only kind of caped to the idea that, hey, we have no control over this situation and the players forced our hand on this. But it also said, like, we just have no vision for what we want this to be. Because, like, I don't know, like, the Raiders team I saw at the end of the season, they're playing pretty hard. Like, I thought that team I watched go walk into the Superdome and beat the Saints, I didn't see a team that was, like, out of control. I saw a team that didn't have the pieces. You didn't have a quarterback. You didn't have so much. So you build, right? Now, they don't even have a coach right now. It's not like they fired Antonio Pierce and we're like, we're going to land the top candidate on the, we're going to go get Ben Johnson. We're going to go with it. Like, they just fired him with no vision. Like, who are they going to hire? It's not going to be anyone inspiring. So, like, I don't know. Like, I don't think you compare it to that, because that's just a weird scenario where the front office that just can't ever seem to get it right. Like, the time that they should have kept on the interim, they didn't do it with Rich Bisaccia after he led them to the playoffs. In John Gruden's absence, they hired Josh McDaniels and also ran who was terrible and probably set them back 4 or 5 years with some of the decisions he made. Then finally they're like, yeah, you know what? Let's give an interim a try. Gave him 1 year, set him up to fail, and then fired him for failing. And now they're just going to do something else. Right. So I'm not comparing the Saints to that organization, because that organization is a dumpster fire. And it always has been a dumpster fire. Well, not always, but it has been for about the last 20 years. So, okay. That's what it is. I'm not comparing it to Dennis Allen, because at that point, yeah, well, what were you mad about? Right? Like, everyone had good vibes in that building. Everyone was like, oh, we went 9-8. We had to start 4 different quarterbacks. We still found a way. We still have the defense. We still have this. We still have that. Like, yeah, the vibes were going to be immaculate, regardless of whether you went with Dennis Allen or somebody else, right? Like, and that's the danger when you come in on a high and you're like, well, it's only going to go down, but we are waiting for it to stay there or go up. But it's like, it's not going to get better. You're not going to improve with Dennis Allen. You're hoping to just keep that status quo when you were not able to, right? So it's a little different now, where you're like, these players have every reason to be like, no, I don't want this guy. Like, this wasn't good. Like, I don't want it. And for them to still, despite all of that, despite everything that's happened, to feel like, hey, he can lead the room. I don't know. And I think the issue I have with the conversation is, we are not talking about Darren Rizzi as a candidate. We are talking about Darren Rizzi as the extension of the prior regime, which I don't know. Like, I think you should separate Darren from the situation this past season and say, okay, how does he stack up with these other coaches? It's not about, well, okay, he didn't go A&O with the interim. Like, he helped preside over this situation that did not go well. Okay, fine. But how does he stack up with these other coaches? Is he a guy that you feel like people will play for? Is he a guy that you feel like people will rally behind, right? Do you feel like he can pull a top offensive coordinator, a top defensive coordinator, and get this thing going? Like, everyone talks about Dan Campbell and acts like, hey, this is the best case scenario. Yet you have a scenario here where you could essentially establish that same type of Dan Campbell thing. Like, these personalities are not that different. Dan's just a more hulking figure, but, you know, like, they're gruff. They say what they mean. They, you know, like, that's not that dissimilar of a scenario. And the key is you need to have that superstar offensive coordinator, that superstar defensive coordinator. And if you are of the belief that that CEO head coach is the way to go, you know, like, look at John Harbaugh with the Ravens. Obviously they're lost, but constantly there. You know, I just can't look at that and say, like, that's a terrible idea. So I don't know. Like, I think people need to step away from this thought that, well, it's more of the same, so it has to be bad, and look at it and say, what went well the second half of this season, and can you build on that? You're not going to be able to turn over the entire roster. You're just not going to be able to. A lot of the players that were out there last year are going to be out there this next year. And I think there are worse things you can do than create an environment that people, that, you know, the players on your team are going to want to go out there and play hard for. And that's just to say, like, people are dismissing Darren out of hand because of that. And I don't think that's fair. And I'm not saying you should hire him because of all these things. I'm just saying you should not disqualify him before this team even, like, and I know the team's not doing that. They haven't even interviewed these other coaches yet, or at least, you know, not more than a Zoom call. So, like, I believe that he is definitely up there on their list of candidates. And it's really just a question of where you land on some of these other guys. So either way, I think that's interesting. I think the timing is interesting. Alvin doesn't do anything by accident. Like, he did not wait until the day before you start interviewing all these guys to throw these tweets out there, because he wasn't paying attention. No, he's paying very close attention. He knew exactly what he was doing. And we'll see. I don't know. I don't expect that to influence the front office all that much, but I'm sure they have been made aware of it, and I'm sure they're going to hear about it, and we'll see where that goes. But anyway, this is Inside Black and Gold. I'm Jeff Nowak. We'll be right back. I want to talk about, okay, what comes next? What happens this next week and beyond, going into Mobile, going into the Senior Bowl, getting ready for the Combine, getting ready for all these draft events, all that good stuff. Who dat? I'm Jeff Nowak. And we're back on Inside Black and Gold. One more quick segment here, getting you ready for the rest of the offseason. I'm Jeff Nowak, and hey, this is a podcast about the Saints, so we're going to talk about the Saints and what's coming up for the Saints. It's head coaching interviews. We talked a lot about that. We don't have to talk more about that. But then it's the Senior Bowl, and I'm kind of fascinated to see, okay, how much does this head coaching search limit the number of heads you have out in Mobile, you know, from a scout? Like, do you send Jeff Ireland out there when, you know, you probably want Jeff Ireland to be a significant part of these head coaching interviews, right? I think you probably do. One of the interesting things is that Mike Kafka is actually one of the head coaches for the teams at the game. So if you are seriously going down that rabbit hole of a Mike Kafka, you know, that would be a good opportunity to get a good look at him in that context. And we'll see how that goes. But, you know, the Senior Bowl is valuable for the Saints because, you know, it's valuable for me because it's valuable for the Saints in the sense that, you know, they're always drafting guys out of the Senior Bowl. You know, it's really not that hard to find. Even this past season, Taliese Fuaga, like, that's where I got my introduction to Tally in terms of, like, I interviewed him at the media event for the game because I was like, well, this is an obvious candidate for the Saints and I'm going to talk to him. And, you know, we talked about a few things that came to fruition of like, hey, do you think you could play either side of the line? Yes, I think I could play either side of the line. Well, hey, when you know it, he gets to New Orleans and he's playing in the left tackle spot after an entire career at right tackle and, you know, stuff like that. So it is interesting. And, you know, every time I go up to Mobile, I do a few things. One is I look at, you know, the players and the lists of, okay, who are people considering to be the top candidates, the top prospects at the Senior Bowl. But a lot of times I'll look at the positions more so than like, okay, what's particularly loaded here? Like what positions should I be actually focusing on as opposed to, you know, what are the names? What are the big names? And a lot of times I kind of allow these players to make themselves visible to me rather than going in there and saying, I want to watch this guy. I want to watch this guy. I want to watch this guy. And a couple players that happened to me for over the last few years, Jaden Reed, Michigan State, really didn't know much about him going in there. I just watched this guy like be feasting every rep, and I was like, "Who is he? Oh, okay, yeah, like this is going to be a player." And you know, go look at what he's done with the Packers over the last few years. Tank Dell out of Houston, another one. Didn't really know a ton about Tank Dell. Go out there and watch him, and he's just burning people. No one can cover him. And then I came back and was like, "Guys, I really want the Saints to draft Tank Dell." End up getting drafted by the Texans. Only thing that's helped slowed him down this year, this past in his career to this point, has been a couple of devastating injuries. So you know, hey, yeah, man, that's. It's tough to say. I mean, like you watch him, like, okay, I get it. Chase Brown out of Illinois, guy I really didn't know much about. And then you know, I come back and I say, hey, this is the guy that I think the Saints should draft. And you know, you watch him on the Bengals, and he's doing his thing. So I still think that's the way to do it, right? Like, because there's confirmation bias when you go in there and say, hey, I want to watch this guy, and then you walk out and you say, hey, I watched him. I think he's good. You know, like because you're going in there like hoping for. To see a guy that's good. I think Theo Johnson was a guy last year that, you know, I came out with a different opinion of that I went in with. But, you know, there's a lot of it. And the Saints, in this draft in particular, you know, you got 9 picks. You're picking 9th overall, 40th overall, 71st overall, 93rd overall, 110, 129, 182, 251, 254. What I'll say is I look at that and I see – opportunities. You know, like when I say the Saints need to collect draft picks, I'm not here saying the Saints need to collect 6th, 7th rounders and just continue to bring these guys in because you're going to cut those guys. Like these are practice squad guys, right? What I want is the Saints to continue to collect day 2 picks because when the Saints have collected day 2 picks or day 1 picks, even when you have multiple firsts, when you have multiple seconds, multiple thirds, they've tended to do pretty well. You know, obviously 2017, you had those multiple first round picks, you had multiple third round picks, and you hit on them all. 2016, you had a first and you had multiple seconds and you hit on them. And then you hit again in the 4th round on David Onyemata, right? When you haven't had those extra picks, you haven't done well. So what I want to make sure when I do want to make it clear, when I say like, hey, I don't want the Saints to consolidate a bunch of picks to go up and get a guy in like the second or the first round. No, I don't want to do that. But I'm okay with, and this is the Adam Trautman draft is the weird one because I actually don't disagree with what they did in that draft. I disagree with where they landed in terms of who they went after. And that was the 2020 draft and the scouting was an issue. But I think the idea there is fine in that I will trade 2, 3, 4 day 3 picks to get an extra third round pick because that's where I make my money, right? The Saints have not landed on a starter, like a legitimate starter, in the 4th round or later since 2019 and C.J. Gardner-Johnson, right? That's a lot of drafts with opportunities to land a late rounder. Like, there's just not that many of them. And yes, you do want to bring those guys in, but at a certain point, the UDFA market is just as lucrative as the 7th round draft pick market. In a lot of cases, more so. Right. Because you have a chance to go find someone and talk to them and really have an idea of whether they're even going to be available for you and bring them in. Right. So I'm OK with saying like we don't need these 7th rounders if we can get ourselves our hands on an extra 3rd rounder. So you have 6 picks in the top 129. You have four picks in the top 93. If I can make that seven picks in the top 129 and five picks in the top 100, I feel good about it. So if I can trade, you know, 4-129, 6-182, 7-251, 7-254, maybe a future fourth for a comp pick at the end of the third round this year, I'm doing that. And it is what it is. Now, what I don't want to see the Saints do is the Marcus Lattimore. That's a different, I kind of combined two Saints draft picks and turned it into an actual player, former running back out of South Carolina. Is the Marcus Davenport trade, where you give up an extra first, an extra second, you go up and you get an extra first. Like, I don't need that. I need you to rebuild the depth on this team, and you do that on day two. Like, day one picks are great. You got to hit the day one picks. There's really no way around that. You got to find a star player at number nine, whoever it is. But I need to nail my second round picks. I need to nail my third round picks. And I need them to be immediate contributors, whether it's special teams, whether it's as a starter on day one, or whether it's as a high level backup who you feel like can step in when needed. Like Kool-Aid McKinstry, I still like that pick. And you saw this year why that's a valuable pick, because it's like, I don't mind drafting on strength, but I want that strength to be able to impact the game immediately. Right. And, you know, was he necessarily ready to step in and be a full-time starter in year one? Probably not. But I didn't feel terrible about having him out there. And he's going to benefit from that in year two. So that's what that is. One other question. I know I'm kind of all over the place here, but this is kind of this weird week where my brain is cold and all that. One person asked on Twitter the other day, like, should the Saints trade back? And I actually think no. I don't think the Saints should trade back from number nine, because I think you have a chance to get a star player at number nine. And we'll see. You know, I think there's a teardrop somewhere when you look at kind of the value of these players. But you should get a star player at number nine. Whether it's, and then the question is, what position is that star player at? And that's going to depend on what happens ahead of you. The other thing to keep in mind is, if you go back and you look at trades, like NFL draft trades, the value of a trade is really contingent on who's there to trade for, right? And in most cases, you're not getting any crazy trade deals unless there's a quarterback there to go trade for, right? Like, teams aren't throwing assets around to move up four picks unless there's a guy they desperately want. And in most cases, the only guy they're going to want desperately is a quarterback. And I look at, you know, the Bears trading up to get Justin Fields. That was a pretty close comp for what the Saints would be able to do if, for example, Shedeur Sanders drops to number nine and someone wants to go up and get him, right? And I tweeted this, and someone's like, you wouldn't draft Shedeur, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I would draft Shedeur. I'm just saying, if he's there, that's when the trade packages would actually start to be worth looking at. And so, just for comparison, what did the Bears have to give up to go up and get Justin Fields? So the Bears, they were originally at number 20. They moved up nine picks. So they moved up to number 11. So, you know, not as far as they would have to move up to get the Saints. So maybe that does change things a little bit for the value. But Chicago sent the Giants the number 20 overall pick. They used it on Kadarius Toney, so that did not work out for them either. But at the time, it felt like really good value. They also sent the fifth rounder for that year, which was number 164 overall. And then in 2022, which is the next season, they sent over their first and fourth overall picks. So in this case, you're moving down nine slots in the first round, adding a fifth rounder, a future first, and a future fourth. That's a pretty good value. I don't think you see that value if a team is moving up to draft a defensive lineman, if a team is moving up to draft whatever. You're only getting that because it's a quarterback and because they see that guy's the quarterback of the future. In this case, neither team made out well in that trade. The Giants drafted a guy who ended up winning a Super Bowl with the Chiefs on his rookie contract, right? It didn't go well. The Bears ended up trading Justin Fields to the Steelers, right? You know, I still think they gave up on him too early, but whatever. It is what it is. And they obviously ended up with Caleb Williams, and we'll see how that goes. But that's really the only scenario where you're going to get a good haul from a team is if Shedeur Sanders or even Cam Ward's not going to drop, but whatever, like one of those two quarterbacks drops to you at number nine and you're going in on it. That's it. And so if you don't think that's going to happen, then it's really not, you know, the Saints have never traded back in the Mickey Loomis era, and I don't think they're going to start doing it now unless you get blown away by an offer. The next question people had for me was like, hey, if you're the GM, are you looking at any particular position? Are you saying like, I want a wide receiver, I want this, I want that? And, you know, one guy who's caught my eye recently is Tet McMillan, T-Mac out of Arizona. Reminds me of Mike Evans. A lot of people are going to throw like T. Higgins, Drake London on him. I don't see that. I see those more as speed guys. Like they're big, but they rely on their speed a little bit more. T-Mac, what I like about him is he has that kind of Mike Evans skill set where he's constantly using his size. And that's what I need out of a big-bodied wide receiver. And I think the Saints could desperately use a big-bodied wide receiver in that wide receiver room. But the problem I have with the idea of drafting a position is you only draft like that if you feel like, hey, we're one or two pieces away from a Super Bowl or from being a playoff contender. When you're in the position the Saints are, your goal has to be acquiring talent. And I don't really care what position that talent is at. As long as it is a star, elite, like franchise-altering type player. Because if you can find that player, you are not bypassing him because you're like, oh, we have two cornerbacks that we feel okay about. We're not going to go get a... No, you're drafting that player, right? Oh, we feel like Trevor Penning is okay, right? No, if you find a franchise-changing left tackle, you're going to go draft a left tackle. You know, if you have your left tackle of the future in the draft, and you can say, hey, we moved Talia Fuaga to right tackle, we maybe try Trevor at guard or whatever, I don't care, you're drafting that guy. So to me, there is really no position that you look at and say, we're not drafting this. The, whatever the star player is at, wherever your player you feel like you have the best grade on, you're going to draft him. And so that's kind of where I am. That's how I'm going to approach the Senior Bowl in the sense like, I really like Jalen Milroe. I think Jalen Milroe is a guy that, if I can get him in the third and fourth round and develop him, I'm okay with it. Like I want the Saints to start going this route of having a dual threat quarterback, right? Now, whether that's Shedeur, whether that's one of these other guys, I don't really care, but that's the type of player that I think at the Senior Bowl, you get a good look at. And you're like, oh, can he develop into a quarterback? And I know people are going to roll their eyes at me, but like, I don't know. I've seen Jalen Milroe play a lot and I see a NFL quarterback. Like if Anthony Richardson can turn into a number four overall pick. why are we going to pretend that like that can't happen for one of these other guys down the line? Now, we'll see how that goes. I also see him as a potential guy who can do Taysom Hill things. So there's value there. I don't know, but that's kind of where I am. And so I'm going to end this kind of meandering final podcast segment on that front. I'm going to be heading out to Mobile on Tuesday. Hopefully it warms up. I know they've been dealing with some winter weather too. I don't know if they got hit with the snow quite as much as we did, but we'll see. Either way, who dat? Go Saints. If you haven't subscribed yet, please do that. Hit me up on Twitter at Jeff_Nowak. Follow the show at Saints_pod. I'll be on Sports Talk with Steve Geller on Friday, 4 to 7 p.m. That's WWL AM 870 FM 105.3 and always on the free Odyssey app. Where you can also find this podcast if you're looking to diversify your podcast portfolio, whatever the hell that means. But until then, thanks everyone for listening. I'm going to bundle up and keep my house as warm as possible, which at this point is a brisk 55 degrees. I don't think most people realize that. If you don't live in New Orleans, one of the issues is when it's cold outside, it's cold inside too. Because the warmest I can get my house right now is 55 degrees, at least downstairs. Upstairs it's a little bit warmer. But the cat's not having a great time. The dog is fine. She's a husky, so she's like, well, why can't it be like this all the time? But whatever. Who dat? Go Saints. Be easy, y'all.